Welcome back, everybody. Today, I'm speaking to Nacho or Ignacio Paus of Penguin Group about mining in South America, Penguin Group in general, and much more. Enjoy. All right. Welcome back. Hello, Nacho. Nice to have you on the show, finally. We've been trying this for a while. How are you?
Yeah, it's on me. I'm sorry. I've been traveling a lot, and you know our industry. We need to be everywhere at the same time, so...
Hash rate comes from everywhere. Yes, thank you for your time, my friend. We are recording at 900480. Last block was found by our friends at Foundry, and hash price sits currently at $5,373. Still keeping stable, although now Bitcoin price looking to make a run up as we speak. And hopefully that'll get us closer to 60 and give some miners some relief to plug in their S19s. Nacho, how are you doing? How was Vegas for you? Tell me a bit about the conference. I only saw you like very briefly at the Digital Shovel event. And otherwise, yeah, you were a ghost. What have you been up to?
Yeah, this one was a big one. It was it felt different. I think it's great for our industry and great for Bitcoin that these conferences get this big. But for us that are working, it was intense because getting a hold of people was almost impossible. So I had to book everything before being there, but it was really good. All the big players were there. It's still the biggest of the year. And all in all, it was amazing.
Do you spend much time at the conference, or is it just an opportunity where you feel like, okay, no, everybody from the industry gets together and now you can have like some in-depth personal meetings? Do you spend time at the conference at all?
Yes, I usually try to sit down on some of the talks that I really find interesting, but lately I've been working so much, having meetings, you know, going to booths or offices or running into people there. It's the place where we all get together and where everything happens. You can, you know, source equipment, infrastructure, start find out where the next opportunity is, because most of us that know each other share the information, and this is important for the industry. Again, there's no point in keeping it secret. We need to grow bigger and we need to be better. So conference for us is the best place where I can actually do work and sit down and have a conversation and, you know, run after leads and, you know, negotiate prices for ASICs or actual infrastructure or anything. So yeah, I pretty much spent this year was meetings all over. I sat down in a couple of talks, but mostly work.
How is negotiating prices and negotiating prices for infrastructure in person versus on email?
I'd much rather do it in person because I can actually get a feeling on how the conversation is going. When you sit down with Chinese providers, it's impossible to read them. I don't speak Mandarin, so that's something that is really complicated to do. I'll tell one of my secrets. I usually record on my phone. I leave it on the table and record the conversations on the phone and then use the translator afterwards to understand what's going on. But I much rather negotiate one-on-one and face-to-face than doing it by email, because you can actually get a feel of what's going on. And if you get it by email, there's always a tone that we set on our side that probably the other side is not on the same page. So I much rather do it face to face. I'm more efficient. And this is the thing that works for me. I'm more efficient like this than only doing it by email. Of course, then we do a minute and we share what we agreed upon and everything needs to be set in paper. But I much rather enjoy or I'm more efficient doing it face to face.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe the secret is to learn Mandarin to be like, to react on the spot to see
I'm trying, but tough. Oh, I have an ear for languages. I speak 4 or 5 languages, but Mandarin, no.
Yeah, I learned some Mandarin in uni, and I went to China to talk to my suppliers, you know, and get to know them and move to the offices. And when we went to to the Hong Kong event in last year, I went to mainland China, to Shenzhen, and I found it very, very intimidating. You cross the border And then you don't realize, you don't recognize the pictures anymore. You can't read anything. Your phone stops working. Nobody speaks English and you're completely lost, you know, and you have no idea how to get anywhere. And if you then show up in an office, they're very surprised that, that you managed. Anyway, Penguin, Nacho, tell me first a bit about how you got into the industry. Maybe give people a 30-second background on what got you started, and then let's give your company a bit of a highlight, the Penguin Group.
Yeah, I was always into blockchain and Bitcoin from the start. My first interaction was 2016 to 2018. Then I got off because I was working on the software development side of things, and I was headhunted into Penguin at a great moment. And the most important part that got me back into the industry and into Penguin was the story. Bjorn, our founder, has really, really deep values. He started this company as an academy to teach people how to code and think, not just like another school or university. And then to support that project, he figured out he needed money and he started mining. And he built a 100-megawatt substation in the middle of Paraguay from the ground up in 10 months. And everything we mine gets a part of our shares goes to the academy to support and teach kids of all ages. We don't discriminate how to code. And these people are making $200 a month. And after they go through the academy, they start making 10, 20 times that. And they really, really make a difference for the community, for the people. So wherever Penguin goes, the academy goes. So wherever we mine, the academy gets a site. And we start to do this over and over again in every site that we go to. Depending on the size is how many kids we can put through it. But I think the number right now is 4,500 kids so far have been through the academy in Paraguay. And kids that have no access to, you know, high-level education or high-paying jobs are now supporting their own family. So the mission that Penguin had in the beginning comes from his vision and his, let's say, philanthropy side. Of course, we're a business and we need to return for our investors, and we're really conscious about how to do it. But that's the one thing that got me hooked into joining Penguin.
Why did Bjorn decide to... I'm assuming it was 100 megawatts of Bitcoin mining?
Yes, we only Bitcoin mine, yeah.
Why did he decide to do Bitcoin mining and not classic data center infrastructure?
He figured out that in order to support the project, he needed something that would make big returns. He understood it, he figured it out, and he doubled down on Bitcoin. And he was a visionary. He did it in 2021, and he's been reaping the success since then. So, and he moved to Paraguay where we have access to massive amount of energy. Back then it was at a premium price. Now the price has risen. The government has put some higher tariffs on the energy here, but we're still profitable. We're still doing it. But he went all into Bitcoin because he thought and believed that this was the future. So
it's very cool. And are you guys doing this anywhere else now, or just in?
We I cannot share the location, but there's two more locations here in Latin America that we're looking to expand to. One is starting with 70 megawatts and with a pipeline of 200 plus. And the other one probably would be between 50 or 150 in another country here in Latin America, just to start.
Very nice. And the future of mining in Paraguay, how do you guys see that?
I think the government is starting to realize that they cannot keep pushing us on and raising tariffs with no apparent reason. The issue with Paraguay is they're selling most of their energy to Brazil. Brazil is generating a lot right now. So the need for that is going to be done in 2028, 2027. So when that happens, all this energy that Big Dam is producing, we'll have no place to go. So I think the future in Paraguay looks promising. Big miners are coming. Hive just bought Bitfarms and are deploying 200 megawatts of their own. plus that site. So there will be 350 megawatts all in. We have the Chinese Muiden. They are now at around 400 megawatts here too. So there's big players in Paraguay. And I think once we all get together and start showing the government that we're not printing money, we're a business that's really complicated and it's really hard to make a profit. And the cornerstone for everything is the price of energy. The government will start to understand and we can bring more investment into the country. That's the most important part.
Yeah. Where else? I mean, are you growing in South America solely, or are you also in other parts of the world?
We are focusing in South America, but we are also looking into Canada. You know what's happening right now. Canada will be the next Texas, and with all these tariffs and everything in the U.S., Canada is looking really good. Big players are moving in. There's plenty of gas available. The weather is ideal for air-cooled equipment. So CapEx is less intensive. So I think Canada is going to be the next Texas for miners. And so we're looking into that. We have a potential project that are around 65 megawatts, expandable in the future, but to start. But it's all just now we're analyzing data and figuring out if it's doable or not. But because it's a big leap, using hydro renewable energy to running a gas site, it's a completely different ballgame.
Explain that. You're running hydro.
Here we run full on hydro energy, so we have no issues with anything. When you start working with a gas site, there's different variations. You have to split the gas, reduce temperature. You have to be careful how to manage it. You have to be efficient if you're running a turbine or engines on maintenance. Rotation is key. So the infrastructure part of side of the business when you're doing gas is really, really high level, and you need people that know what they're doing. So it's really important to know that before you do it.
This episode is sponsored by Hashbranch, the easiest way to mine Bitcoin in the US. Sourcing hardware and rack space usually is a mess. Bad deal structures, misaligned incentives, and no visibility after deployment. I have placed tens of thousands of ASICs in partnership with Hashbranch. What I like most is that they cut through the noise. Fair pricing, aligned terms, and access to hosting that actually works. Use code HASHRATEUP100, visit hashbranch.com today to get $100 off of each miner that you order. As a private company, you guys do all of this with investors, right?
Yes.
And if you invest a large part of your revenues into it, the treasury is somewhat more limited, arguably, right? So if you come to a gas site like this, Nacho, tell me how you think about this. You go in, you say, okay, price for gas is, I don't know, 2 cents, 2.5 cents, depending on a generator. And then it's like a million per megawatt CapEx, right? I still don't understand how that works, because now if you give the generator or the CapEx for the electrical infrastructure investment, excuse me, a lifetime, you can now say, okay, you know, the real price, if we want to amortize this share of the project over 10 years or 5 years, the real price for energy is also 4 or 5 cents. So how do you guys think about that? Does it make a difference?
You go lower on the price of gas. Yeah, it's really like that. You need to be much better than 2.5 to actually make the numbers work. So we need to find really, really cheap gas as clean as possible, and this is pipeline spec gas, or there's some wells that are pretty, again, it's all about finding the right place. But on the return, yes, you have a point. If we split that investment in 10 years and you have to renew your ASICs every three and a half, so it's not only that million that you spend on the first go, you need to do it twice or three times in a window of 10 years. Depending on the ASIC, depending on the performance, depending on the price of hash, there's a lot of variables that change our industry, change our performance. So if you are, for instance, in somewhere in the world and you're at 2 cent energy, you can run S19s or J Pros like nothing. They will be extremely profitable. Makes no sense to, you know, bring S21 XPs because they're too expensive and the difference is not going to be worth the trouble. So it's all about knowing the variables, analyzing the opportunity, and putting in your models to figure out which is the better outcome. You know, we all work on a return basis, and we need to be diligent since we're not a public company with our investors, and be careful with their money. So for us, it's a really, really tight ship, and we look for these opportunities that are extremely rare, with, you know, super low price of gas, super low price of energy, where we can get in infrastructure with the fewest taxes, because that's another issue. When you import $65 million of ASICs and you have a 10-20% import tax, or tariffs like in the US of 100%, you won't return the money in 20 years. So you have to analyze all these variables to actually pull the trigger.
You already talked about Canon. I want to ask you, Nacho, it seems like, and I said this before we started recording, to me, I don't know, maybe you can tell me whether you echo the sentiment. It feels like the industry really is struggling to find an answer to what the second best option is. There is no second best. What the second best option after mining in the US is, with all of these tariffs looming, it seems like people are really scrambling to find the best places, and it's kind of up in the air, you know, where people want to go. 6 months ago, I would have said, you know, mine in Texas, you can get 4 cent power on grid. There's a lot of power available. Why would you go anywhere else? Because the jurisdictional risk is so low. And if you pair that with 4 cent power, there is no better place to mine Bitcoin, right? You go to Paraguay, prices increase. Ethiopia, regulatory environment is super volatile, and it's not really permitted to import used equipment, right? Now you said Canada, high capex on gas. There's some stranded hydro, but that's also in I would say, far left-leaning territories where it's maybe questionable how long Bitcoin mining will be accepted there. So just give me some thoughts around how you navigate this current environment. And if you had to choose today to, I don't know, invest 50 megawatts of capex for Bitcoin mining, where would you put it if you weren't mining anywhere else?
So there's no second best option right now. My read on what I researched is, for instance, Ethiopia for me is too risky. It's too volatile. I don't know what's going to happen. People are investing a lot of money there, and I'm really concerned of what might happen in the context of the government, the context of regulatory issues. And for me, even if it's a left ish country, Canada will be the second best option right now. I think most of the big players are heading toward there with all the changes that after the Trudeau thing. So now there's issues with that. For instance, if you are a small miner and you're using, according to the regulation, you have to use an FPPS pool, because by regulatory by the regulation they printed, you're bound to use just an FPPS pool, and you cannot use anything else. You cannot use Ocean, for instance. You have to go with Foundry or any of the FPPS pools.
Explain that to me again. I don't understand.
There's a regulation that approved mining in Canada, but any deployment there needs to be, for compliance, using an FPPS pool. So that's the one thing, the one problem that I find on the Canada front, but that needs to be researched and navigated. Then these gas sites have really, really cheap power, really, really cheap gas with high-end gas. So pipeline gas can be even lower than 2 cents right now. And if you know how to invest in the infrastructure correctly, for instance, if you're going to do 50 megawatts, I would go with small engines, 370 engines. I would buy 10% extra and rotate them in order to keep up the uptime. I would go full air cool because the weather is dry and cool all year. So deploying would be ideal if you are in those prices to deploy older equipment, which you can import with no problems, because Canada has no more these crazy regulations that they used to have. So if I were to say which is the best right now, second best, it would be Canada. And then there's opportunities that you need to find, like, we found one that you know very well in Brazil. There's other countries in Latin America, but you need to know how to navigate them because they're complicated. Governments are volatile. They change on the steps. They change a PPA before you are about to sign, and try to squeeze in different stuff. So you need to be really diligent and really good at doing the homework to navigate these opportunities. What's happening in Bhutan? What's happening that Bitdeer has a site there? There's opportunities around the world. Africa, everybody's looking into Ethiopia, but there's plenty of other opportunities in Africa where there's a lot of energy there. They have no way to transmit. So if there's no transmission, that energy is stranded. So what we would bring as an industry is we would invest, take some of that energy, and what we invest as miners can go into infrastructure for these countries. Of course, we have to deal with corruption and the lay of the land and how human beings behave. But for us, it's a way like we could bring in massive investment into these countries that are not used to having it in order to improve their infrastructure.
If you want to mine at scale, that's the conflict miners have, right? You can find privately owned sort of smaller setups where you can mine smaller quantities, and don't have to deal with outside regulation or what, because it all happens on private land, and you deal with people on the ground and not with governments, right? But as soon as you sort of hit a certain threshold, you always have to deal with regulation. And I have no idea how South America works. I only know from yourself and others in the region that it's not very easy. I know you are Argentinian, right?
Yeah, I was born in Argentina, and I've been in Paraguay for 5 years now.
Do you have any, I mean, you said you need to be able to navigate the land, right? So obviously you'd be a good fit for doing that. Do you see any mining happening in Argentina? Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about that.
Yeah.
The new president and everything.
The president is really open to working, to bring investment and open to Bitcoin, and everything is great. The problem with Argentina is the energy companies are private. And those energy companies are charging $60 a megawatt for the open market. So they rather sell to the open market that bring opportunities like us. Of course, there are opportunities. We have Vaca Muerta in Argentina, is the biggest gas site in South America. We have gas stranded in the south in Tierra del Fuego. And these big companies have to pay the states with gas for the right to dig and research. So this the way to do it in Argentina is going with the governors and the different states and trying to cut a deal with them. But that's the only way you can do it. Regulatory issues in Argentina, there's places where there are opportunities, like for instance, there's a free port in Bahía Blanca, there's a free port in Tierra del Fuego where you don't pay any taxes, no import taxes, no VAT, no nothing. But since those opportunities are there, what they're trying to do is overcharge us on energy. So they want to win and win. That's a really Latin American thing, and I can speak from Mexico down. I've been everywhere in Latin America, and it's something that I hate about ourselves, that we want to always one up everybody and not think about the actual future and the investment. So the president is really open. I know him personally. He's a really smart guy. He believes in Bitcoin. But the problem is you have to deal with these other people that want to always, make one more extra, 10 here and 5 here. And if you come, you need to invest. Like, I want 6 months of upfront guarantees. And this for us makes the project unviable. They think we print money. That's the problem with that. So it's doable. Yes. It's going to be hard. Yes. You need to know the regulatory people. You need to know governors again, you need to show up, visit them, explain, show them how much money you would invest, bring some value to the table. Again, and if you build any infrastructure there, by law, if you build a substation in Argentina, it becomes owned by the government. So whatever infrastructure you build, you cannot even think about amortizing that. It's not going to be yours. They allow you to do it. They give you a premium price of energy, but you will lose that investment of, you know, if it's 100 megawatts, $16 to $20 million that you throw under the table just because regulatory issues in Argentina are really hard to go around. And there's no way, nothing you can do about that. If you build a substation, it's going to be owned by the government, wherever you put it. Then you can operate it and get a good price of energy and everything. If you can navigate around all that, it's great.
Are you still selling your hard-mined Bitcoin for expenses like mining hardware, electricity bills, and tax invoices? With Firefish, you can access liquidity in fiat or stablecoins without selling your Bitcoin. Firefish is a peer-to-peer marketplace for non-custodial Bitcoin-backed loans. No credit checks and no monthly payments. Sign up on Firefish today, create a loan request, deposit BTC into a multisig, get funded by an investor, and repay at the end of the term. Collateral is always at least 2x the loan. So if BTC drops by 50%, you may be liquidated. So be sure at any time to top up the collateral as needed. Thanks to the legends at Firefish for sponsoring the show. Use HashRateUp for a 30% discount on the fees and get your first Bitcoin-backed loan today. It's rough to ask somebody for money to invest in a substation when you have to tell them it's not theirs. But I feel like if anyone can change that, then you know the current president would be the one to understand free markets and free market capitalism. And you know, you can point to the US and say, why can't we do it like here where we are now? And I saw this talk from Russell Cann and Matthew Schultz at the Vegas conference, which was fascinating to me, where we revitalize these towns in rural America that have all of this power infrastructure, all of this capacity, but they're not using it because it's, you know, the consumption has moved elsewhere. Do you see that changing? Do you see the sentiment changing at all? Or, you know, are you investing your time in other South American countries where it's even more promising? What
I
do
see
you have
that
any hope?
changing, yes, but you have to fight against 7 years of socialism. So, in the depth of the government, there's still a lot of socialists. The president's been doing a massive cleanup. He's cleaning up everything and anything, but it will take more than 4 years. He just won the midterm elections in most of the states, so he's really doing well, and I hope he can win again. And I see that happening in the next one. So we have a couple more years of him in a government on his first term, and he can be reelected. If that happens, I think he's going to focus on that, and I see that that's going to be the future. But you still have to deal with governors locally in the different states. That's a problem. So Latin America has a lot of opportunities. Brazil has a lot of energy, a lot of energy. Again, regulatory issues there is import tax is insane, 80% import tax. But if you can navigate it with specific equipment, knowing the lay of the land and having a great legal team to support you, you can do it. You can reduce that massively. And then the good thing is now they are opening up and they're changing those tariffs for the specific business, not for Bitcoin. They're scared about Bitcoin, but they want to do data center builds. So I think there's a window opportunity for us now, since they're building these massive data centers. And if we build like the one we have, these type of data centers, not just farms, they will be open and keen to work with us because they want to bring investment, and they know we have a lot of money to invest, and they have all this stranded energy, and there's no transmission in most of these places. They have big dams that lack transmission, and we would be the means to an end. So we come in, we invest a lot of money, they get the money for the energy, and they can reinvest that money in order to keep building transmission and starting opening up the market. But Brazil now is trending to decrease the prices of energy because there's so much solar, wind, hydro, starting to energize that the market's tending down instead of up.
The question is, how can the market figure out the real price for energy if it's not interconnected? Right? So if there is no interconnection between all the solar, wind, renewable assets, the fossil assets, there is no real price finding mechanism because the energy cannot flow. right? And then it's all about soaking it up. And then, yeah, you deal with the regulatory environment again, where all of this infrastructure is probably government owned, or at least to a part government owned, and yada yada yada. There is a way in Argentina and Brazil to temporarily import ASICs, right, to get a better rate. Can you tell me a bit about that and how that works?
You can do it in Brazil. There's two laws that will pass probably in the next months that will remove that tax, but now you can do it at between 4.5 and 7% a year on ASICs, on temporary import. And in Argentina, depending on the port that you choose, you can have it between 0 and 21, depending on how you import them and where you import them and where they're going to be placed. There's a lot of caveats to it. So worst case scenario is 21 for temporary import. Best case scenario, you can do it for 0. Like I told you, there's places, specific places where you can get 0 tax. And if you assemble them, like for instance, in Tierra del Fuego, that's called maquila, that's the law, you don't pay that. You just import the parts and you put them together in Tierra del Fuego with a little facility, and those ASICs won't be bound to have import tax. So you can import the parts on a temporary import base, you assemble them, and you can decrease this. So there's little ways to navigate these issues if you know what you're doing. But again, it's all about knowledge, how to do it, where to do it, if it's doable or not. You need support from the local authorities. You need to comply with every regulatory mark that you need to check in order to actually make it happen. It's not easy.
Do you guys use or foresee using used ASICs there? How easy is it? And I know in Paraguay this is an issue. Maybe you can speak to that as well. How easy is it to import used ASICs at the real market value versus the risk of government officials looking up, I don't know, M31S Plus online and seeing a price of $1,400 and thinking, yeah, that's the value?
We don't have that issue because we show everything and we comply with the government here. So we can import it, pay our 10% tax on temporary import, and then there's laws that you can comply with, like 6090 in Paraguay or Maquila, this assembly that I told you about, that will give you these tax discounts. So it's doable, but again, you need to comply with a lot of stuff. So in Paraguay, in particular, there's temporary import. After 3 years, you need to either ship them out to some other location if we have it, or fully import them, and that will be costly. The good thing is, if you work with either old ASICs or brand new ones, 3-year window is really good. So if you have sites around Latin America, you can rotate them, and that will give you the window of opportunity if you are good at it and you can do it with a lot of thought. I'm not that type of guy. We have a great procurement guy that will navigate this, but we rotate everything in a way that we always keep them in a loop, so you don't pay the tax. So that's the smart thing. If you diversify in these countries, you can have 2-3 sites and you can rotate them until you run them to the ground, of course. But one rotation will be more than enough. So you run them 2.5 years at premium price of energy, and then you put them on another place where the energy is even cheaper, and you put them to pasture there, and you can actually then avoid this taxation. But again, it's all about knowing the lay of the land. Yeah.
Hash Rate Up is sponsored by solomining.de, the place to buy open source home and solo mining devices like the BitX. With about 20 watts of usage, these solo mining devices are perfect to play the lottery from home or from the office. Get 5% off with the code HASHRATEUP. Thanks to the legends at solomining.de for sponsoring the content. It's funny that you say that, because it leads me to one of the later questions that I want to ask you, which was this sort of pipeline question, right? Everybody's very focused on new machines, especially public mining companies, right? Because they need to show that they're procuring always the best and latest and greatest. But nobody really looks at used machines, right? And now, for the first time in the industry's history, really, I think, we have a massive volume of M30S, M30S Plus, S19J Pros, all of these machines that are not profitable enough anymore for the time or for the place where they were procured, or what they were procured for. You know, we talk all about the hosting contract at 6-7 cents, no chance, right? You talk about mining on the grid for 5 cents, plus then all the other costs, and doesn't make it worth it. Paraguay also is similarly priced. So do you guys have, like, what does your pipeline look like? Do you, and the funnel, do you have your biggest amount of capacity at that sort of higher priced, low risk value, or low risk jurisdiction? And then where do you funnel them to? Do you reduce the uptime to get lower power prices? You said you shift the ASICs to maybe, I don't know, I was thinking, I'm working on some projects here in South Africa. I have like 30% solar uptime, you know, where you can ROI an S90.
Yeah, it's called graveyard mining. You can put them to pasture there. You can, if you are over my calculations, we tried to do it in Chile because of the high radiation in Atacama Desert. And the uptime there is between 32 and 38. Even with old equipment, it was not worth, because the energy they want to charge us is really expensive. What I told them is like, if you are going to charge me 1.5 cents, I can do graveyard mining at 32, 38, because that's stranded energy. So I'm helping you survive until you get transmission. Everybody's happy. So I'm all about using used equipment in the right conditions. You need to have a really, really cheap price of energy. You need to be really good at running them. Mm. And I will go always for the, as high uptime as possible, but the price needs to be ridiculously low. And those projects can IRR pretty fast. So yeah. those machines will get you the capex that you need to keep expanding in the same site and keep doing this on a loop. So I know that the PACOs need this new equipment to, you know, raise the price of their stock and show that they are super powerful and they are buddies with MicroBT and Bitmain and Bitdeer and everything is nice and dandy. But there's projects that are much more profitable by running used equipment than using the new equipment. It's like, you know, bringing a tank to a fight. Makes no sense. You don't do that.
Is Penguin a net buyer or a net seller of older ASICs?
No, we buy. We don't sell our equipment. We mine them until there's nothing left.
And then what happens when the
we haven't reached that point. That point yet. So I don't know what would happen, but so far we're really, really good at keeping the uptime, even the weather is the worst in the world because it's moist, hot year round. Now it's the middle of winter and I'm wearing a shirt.
The weather here is similar to South Africa. It's winter, but I'm wearing a fleece. Sun is shining. Anyway, last question. Last topic that I wanted to ask you about, Nacho, was hash rate derivatives. Do you guys use those at all? Like, the market for selling hash rate is becoming really vast. There's a lot of competition now for Luxa. Is this something you guys have dabbled in? Have you sold hash rate before? Have you bought hash rate before? What do you think?
No, we were planning on doing it in order to keep our efficiency really high. But we figured out that it was not the best way to do it. I think it's something that's going to happen. I think it's ramping up. I think it's now getting big. You can see NiceHash is making really, really big waves. So I think it's the future. I think most will start to do it, but we haven't tried it and it's not in our plans to do it for now.
Where do you see your biggest strength compared to all the other guys that produce hash rate on the market? Why do you think Penguin will still be here? What's going to be the biggest reason for that?
The operational team. The team that's running the sites is the best I've ever seen. I've been to most of the sites around the world, all these big companies and everything, but these guys run this place like clockwork. They have all these creative ideas on how to either cool down transformers, they're machining hydrogen on transformers, surrounding the equipment in a way that will keep it cooler. They're so creative and so good at this. The gem at Penguin is not only our leader, Bjorn, but the operational team. That's what keeps Penguin running, and that's what will stand out in the future, because if you're not great at operating, even if you find a great price of energy and you're not keeping the uptime proper, you're not going to make money.
All right. Mining in 10 years, Nacho, what does that look like? You guys have negative energy prices? Are you still paying for power? Are you getting paid to mine?
We need to get to negative prices of power in order to make it for the that long. We need to find these gas opportunities or this understand curtailment in a way like it's done in Texas with a depth that will make us work at negative price of energy, because if not, we won't be profitable.
Understood. Anything I didn't ask, Nacho, that you wish I had asked you?
No, brother. We've been talking a lot about this, and I think it's really good for people to start looking into Latin America. Finding the right partners to do it is important, and having a great operational team is going to be the key. That's the conclusion that I would say. But again, my second best option now is Canada.
Right. Great summary. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time, guys. I hope you learned something. Don't sleep on South America is what I've learned. You know how this works. Like, subscribe, all of that good stuff. Thank you again, Nacho, for your time. Hope to see you around soon. Cheers.